music you love here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Katie Weaver, and Faith Perlow. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The World Health Organization, or WHO, announced the next step in its release of the world's first approved malaria vaccine. The release is expected to take place in three African countries: Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. But the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a vaccine supporter, has said it has concerns. WHO said last fall the vaccine was a historic development in efforts to control malaria. But the Gates Foundation told the Associated Press this week that it will no longer financially support the vaccine. Some scientists warn the decision could leave millions of African children at risk. It could also weaken future efforts to solve difficult problems in public health. The vaccine is called Mosquirix and is sold by GlaxoSmithKline, or GSK. It is about 30% effective and requires 4 doses. The malaria vaccine has a much lower efficacy than we would like, said Philip Welkoff. He is the Gates Foundation's director of malaria programs. The foundation is ending its support after spending more than $200 million and working more than 20 years to get the vaccine. Welkoff also said the vaccine is too costly and difficult to provide. Welkoff said the foundation's money would be better spent on other malaria vaccines and treatments. Some of the resources that might have gone into providing the vaccine to countries have been redirected to buy new mosquito nets. Alistair Craig is with the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. It's not the greatest vaccine in the world, but there are ways of using it that could have a big impact, he said. The worldwide COVID-19 pandemic hurt efforts to stop malaria. Malaria killed more than 620,000 people in 2020 and caused 241 million cases, mainly in children under 5 in Africa, Craig said. There could be another vaccine approved in about 5 years, but that's a lot of lives lost if we wait until then, Craig said. There is another vaccine currently being developed by Oxford University. BioNTech, creator of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, also plans to use the messenger RNA technology it used for the coronavirus for a malaria shot. But that project has just begun. Another big problem is production. GSK said it can only produce about 15 million injections per year until 2028. WHO estimates that to protect the 25 million children born in Africa every year, at least 100 million doses every year might be needed. All the money in the world would not help the vaccine's short-term supply problems, said Welkoff. He noted that the Gates Foundation continues to support the Gavi Vaccine Alliance. Gavi said it is spending nearly $156 million to make the vaccine available in the three African countries. The vaccine, even with its problems, is still greatly desired in Malawi. Nolia Zidana said she hopes to get her two young sons the shot after seeing malaria sicken them several times, and surviving it herself. Growing up with my parents and siblings, we have been sick from malaria all the time, she said. Dr. Michael Kayange is with Malawi's Ministry of Health. He urged everyone in the country to take whatever measures they can to stop malaria. Immunization itself is unable to stop the disease, and people should take many measures, he said. Even just by sleeping under a mosquito net, you have played your role in reducing the malaria burden in the country, he said. I'm Dan Novak.
Annie England Noblin is 40 years old and lives in rural Missouri. She has never had a problem getting her medication, methotrexate, until last week. Noblin takes methotrexate to treat a condition called rheumatoid arthritis. When taken in high amounts, the medicine can cause an abortion or the end of a pregnancy. Last week, Noblin's pharmacist said she needed confirmation from her doctor that the drug was not going to be used to cause an abortion. The state of Missouri now bans almost all abortions. Methotrexate can be used to end a pregnancy, but it is also one of the leading medicines doctors prescribe to treat rheumatoid arthritis, which affects more than 1 million Americans. In the end, the pharmacy filled the prescription. But Noblin said she wants to change to a different, more costly medication in case the pharmacy refuses to fill her prescription in the future. It made me feel I couldn't be trusted with the medication prescribed to me simply because I have a uterus, Noblin said. Missouri's restrictive anti-abortion laws went into effect following last month's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn the 1973 ruling known as Roe v. Wade. The case protected abortion rights throughout the United States for the last 50 years. More than 30 states have enacted legislation that restricts the ability to get medication that can be used to end a pregnancy. 6 other state laws clearly list methotrexate as an abortion-causing medication, says Stephen Schultz. He is director of state legislative affairs for the patient support group Arthritis Foundation. Today, women in Missouri and other states, including Texas, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee, have problems getting methotrexate. Some have faced difficulties getting the medicine from pharmacies. Others say their doctors simply stopped prescribing the drug. That information comes from social media posts examined by Reuters reporters and the support groups Global Healthy Living Foundation and the Arthritis Foundation. Rachel Rebouche is a law professor at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She said such laws have a chilling effect on doctors and pharmacists. The laws often lead care providers to not give out medications that can cause an abortion because they fear legal punishment. Last week, the U.S. Government Health Agency told pharmacies they are required to fill prescriptions under federal civil rights laws. It said denying women methotrexate could be considered discrimination. The government's guidance shows the possible effects across the country in limiting such prescriptions. But the federal guidance may not be enough to deal with concerns about state bans. Ribouche said, "We'll have to wait and see what the federal government is willing to do to ensure people have the information they need." The National Community Pharmacists Association represents 19,000 independent pharmacists. It said in a statement that pharmacists are caught in the crossfire between conflicting federal and state laws. CVS and Walgreen Boots Alliance are two of the biggest U.S. pharmacy companies. Representatives for both said they tell their pharmacists to confirm methotrexate will not be used to end a pregnancy before giving it to people in states with strict abortion laws. Methotrexate is a low-cost drug. It is commonly prescribed to treat diseases like lupus. It has been approved to treat rheumatoid arthritis for more than 30 years. It is also used to treat cancer. In much higher amounts, it can end a pregnancy, complete miscarriage, or end a life-threatening form of pregnancy called an ectopic pregnancy. Pharmaceutical market research company IQVIA found that about 500,000 methotrexate prescriptions a month were written in the past year. I'm Katie Weaver.
In this week's Everyday Grammar Report, we will talk about how to communicate politely in emails, especially when making requests. Samuel from China recently wrote to us asking about how to communicate more effectively in email. Thank you, Samuel, for suggesting the idea. Knowing how to express politeness is important, especially if you are emailing in English for a job or school. Let's consider a few ways to make our communication by email more polite when making requests. When writing a request by email, there are several ways to express your politeness. Turning a command into a question. Instead of making your request as a command, turn the request into a question. Commands, or imperatives, use the you form of a verb to create the command. Instead of,
"Please meet me at 5 p.m.
You could say,
"Do you want to meet me at 5 p.m.?
Here, we use a yes or no question to make the request. You can make a yes or no question this way.
Auxiliary verb plus subject plus main verb.
The question permits the receiver a choice, which is more polite. The receiver could say yes or no and provide a reason or suggest a different time to meet. Use of please. Did you notice anything about the use of please in the above examples? The word please was used in the command, and it was not used in the more polite question. We do not always have to use please to make a polite request. Sometimes the use of please can come across as too strong or demanding. In email, we do not always pick up on the tone of what is written.
Could you please meet me at 5 p.m.?
This question may come across as too strong.
Would you like to meet me at 5 p.m.?
Using would like is a polite way to offer and make requests. The use of please is not necessary here. Requests with modals. Modals are verbs that are used to express possibility, ability, or necessity. These include verbs like would, could, will, and can, among others. You can use modals with your question to make a request. Could and would are the more polite forms. Can and will are still polite, but they are used for requests that are more casual or informal. Here are some common expressions with modals to make your request. Could.
Could you help me with this? Do you think you could meet me later next week?
Would.
Would you have time to help me? Would you be able to take me to the store later?
Will.
Will you still pick me up from the airport?
Can.
Can you get me a coffee if you're going to the cafe?
When we use these modals to make requests, the level of politeness is understood because the polite meaning is attached to the modal itself. Today, we talked about three ways to make our requests more polite. We can turn a command statement into a question. We can choose to use or not use please when making the request. And we can use modals to help express the request. Next time, we will continue our report about politeness in emails, covering three more ways to make polite requests. I'm Faith Perlow.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Millard Fillmore, the 13th President of the United States. Fillmore is also likely the least remembered president. He has been called uninspiring and having only some competence. But Fillmore provided an example of the American dream come true. He rose from a poor family to become a wealthy man. He was elected to Congress four times and nominated for vice president under Zachary Taylor. When Taylor unexpectedly died in office in 1850, Fillmore took his place. Other presidents' campaigns, such as Andrew Jackson's, had spoken proudly of their candidates' modest beginnings. William Henry Harrison's supporters especially linked him with the image of a simple house called a log cabin, even though William Henry Harrison was a wealthy man. But Millard Fillmore really was born in a log cabin. His family was poor. They raised him and his 7 brothers and sisters in a rural part of New York State. Fillmore did not receive much education as a child. However, he was very interested in learning, so interested that he fell in love with his teacher, Abigail Powers. The two married after he launched his career as a lawyer. They had 2 children, a son and a daughter. Millard Fillmore soon entered politics. He won elections to the New York State Assembly and then to the U.S. House of Representatives. After 8 years in Washington, D.C., Fillmore returned to New York. He failed to be elected governor, but succeeded to become comptroller of New York. In other words, he oversaw the state's finances. At that time, Americans were preparing for another presidential election. President James Polk was retiring from the White House after only 1 term, as he had promised. The opposition party, the Whigs, nominated Zachary Taylor as their presidential candidate. Taylor, a popular war hero from the South, owned slaves. But the Whigs realized that many anti-slavery voters in the North would not support Taylor. Party leaders were looking for someone to balance the ticket. A Northerner voters would consider a friend of business. They found Millard Fillmore. In 1847, the Whigs nominated Fillmore as Taylor's vice president. The two men had never met, and when they did meet, they did not like each other very much. Taylor was short-legged, poorly educated, and rarely seemed concerned about his physical appearance. Fillmore was taller, learned, and elegant. Their personalities did not fit together any better than their appearances did. But a majority of voters liked them. The Whigs won the election, and Fillmore returned to Washington. As vice president, Millard Fillmore was the leader of the Senate. But President Taylor did not seek his advice on the major political issue of the day. At the time, both lawmakers and the public were debating whether the government should, and could, ban slavery in the territories the U.S. had gained after the war with Mexico. In general, Northerners did not want to permit slavery in new states, but many Southerners did. The debate was so heated that one of the Southern states, South Carolina, threatened to leave the Union. President Taylor did not want to expand slavery. To restrict it, he proposed a change to the rules so California and New Mexico could enter the Union quickly as slave-free states. But before Taylor's idea could get too far, he became sick. Fillmore learned the president was not well and prepared for the worst. It came. Taylor died after being in office for only 16 months. The following day, Fillmore was sworn in as president. One of Fillmore's first acts as president was to show where he stood on the slavery issue. He appointed a man who opposed Taylor to Secretary of State. That man, Daniel Webster, and others, wanted to pass a compromise bill on slavery. With Fillmore's support, they succeeded. The Compromise of 1850 included several measures related to slavery. Two measures limited it. California was admitted as a free state, and the slave trade in Washington, D.C. ended. On the other hand, New Mexico and Utah were left open to slavery, and both the federal government and ordinary citizens were required to return suspected escaped slaves to their owners. That last measure, the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, targeted even free African Americans and enslaved people who had escaped to free states. The compromise aimed to end the conflict between pro-slavery and anti-slavery forces, but neither side was really satisfied. And President Fillmore did not help matters. He was personally opposed to slavery. However, he did not act on his beliefs. Instead, he tried to keep the South in the Union by strongly enforcing the Fugitive Slave Act. By the end of Fillmore's 3 years in the White House, many members of his Whig Party were angry with him. Party leaders did not nominate him again for the next election. But their chosen candidate was not successful either. Fillmore turned out to be the last Whig president. The end of Fillmore's presidency included difficulty in his private life, too. His wife, Abigail, became sick on the day the next president was sworn in. She died within a month. Soon after, Fillmore's daughter died, too. To help deal with their loss, Fillmore tried to stay active in politics. In the presidential election of 1856, Fillmore served as the candidate for a new party, the Know-Nothing Party. The Know-Nothings were strongly opposed to immigration. They especially wanted to limit the number of Irish Catholics who could come to the United States. Fillmore did not agree with the party's anti-immigration policies, but he did not have a chance to put his opinions into policy. Fillmore finished third out of the three major candidates in the election. After that loss, he finally retired to the city of Buffalo, New York. There, Fillmore married a second time to a wealthy widow named Carolyn McIntosh. He remained an important figure in the city's charities and other causes. But the political situation in the country grew only more intense. Americans continued to be divided over the issue of slavery. Fillmore's time in office and his compromise bill may have delayed, but did not stop, the American Civil War. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.